You tuned in to the Kojo Namdi show on WAMU 88.5. Welcome. Later in the broadcast, we'll talk about hate incidents involving race, sexual orientation, or religion in Maryland and Virginia. But first, a number of recent animal attacks have affected Washingtonians throughout the region. Just last week, a woman and her dog sustained serious injuries after five dogs attacked her during a walk in Rockville, Maryland. Another woman was killed in her home in D.C.'s Congress Heights by a dog she had adopted 8 years ago. In addition, two raccoons with rabies were reported in D.C. One was euthanized after attacking three people in Chevy Chase. That was all in the past week. What should you do if you encounter an aggressive animal, either at home or in the wild? Have you had experience with an aggressive dog in your neighborhood? What approach did you take with the dog and its owner? Joining me in studio is Dan DeRamo. He is the Director of Animal Control at the Humane Rescue Alliance. Dan DeRamo, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Vito Del Vento. He is the Program Manager of D.C.'s Animal Services and Animal Disease Prevention in the district's Department of Health. He's also a vet. Vito Del Vento, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dan, last week, was it a normal week at the Department of Animal Control in D.C.? How often do cases like this, the ones we mentioned, happen?
Last week was not a normal week. It was a busy week for all of us. These sort of situations are sort of worst-case scenarios, and unfortunately, we had several of them all in the same week.
When was the last time, for instance, that someone was killed by a dog in the district?
That I know of, in the 90s, I believe, early 90s. It has been quite a while, not something that happens with any sort of regularity in D.C. or the country, for that matter.
15 or 20 years, maybe. Vito, regarding the attack in Rockville, I know that's not your jurisdiction, but what are the leash laws in D.C. and the surrounding Maryland and Virginia counties? What should people understand about regulations of local dogs?
So the district does have leash laws, and the leash law essentially is comprehensive in stating that any animal that is not within one's residence should be on leash. And there's really no exception for that, except if an animal is at one of the designated dog parks. And that's pretty standard both through the district as well as the surrounding counties.
Moving on to raccoons, what about rabies? How often do you see a positive test for that?
So we do standard surveillance in the district, and that surveillance is for zoonotic diseases in general, rabies being one of those. And then I just spoke with my team just to confirm our statistics, but this year we have done surveillance on a total of 195 animals, of which 37 were raccoons, and of those 37, 15 were in fact confirmed positive for being rabies carriers.
Vito, what other diseases are you monitoring in the city?
So the district has a very comprehensive program for zoonotic surveillance, and the ones that are standard and common for folks in the district would be, of course, the rabies surveillance. In addition to that, West Nile surveillance, and in recent years, the Zika surveillance. And that's all in light of some of the mosquito issues that we've been dealing with, both in this country as well as in some of the southern areas of the states.
Dan DeRamo, rabid raccoons might be a bit scary, but are not the only animals that are considered high risk for that virus. What other animals do you get calls about?
What animals do we get calls about, or what animals are high risk?
Both.
Well, we'll get calls about everything, from domestic to wild. The high-risk animals that we deal with are raccoons, foxes, bats, skunks, and we also pay close attention to beavers and groundhogs in this area, just for some positive cases that came up outside the district. We keep a close eye on them inside the district as well.
When it comes to rabies, bats can be involved, right?
Correct.
Can you explain how that happens, Vito?
Sure thing. So bats are certainly a potential carrier. I am happy, though, to announce that all of the animals that Mr. DeRamo has listed in our surveillance program have all been negative this year for rabies. So the only positives that we've had thus far have been raccoons. But bats, just as any other animal, potentially can be a carrier. The issue with bats, of course, is that they fly at night, and when people are sleeping, there's always the concern that, especially if a bat is in one's house, if it flies over an individual who's sleeping who happens to be open mouth breathing, and there's any saliva droplets from that bat, essentially the rabies virus is contained in that saliva, and therefore an individual can come in exposure to that unbeknownst to them as they're sleeping.
That's why my lips are sealed when I'm sleeping. Here is Mary in Rockville, Maryland. Mary, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I was just calling, responding to the topic today. Last week, I was leaving my house, and I heard a vicious dog next door attacking somebody. So I called the police and the rescue squad, and they came and removed the dog from the house, an unneutered pit bull who never had any shots or anything. And the dog was out of the house for about 6 hours before he was returned back to the house. I have a daughter who's legally blind, legally deaf, and mobility impaired, and I have to use a wheelchair to escort her to the car. And that dog is constantly jumping over that fence, and there's nothing I can do about it. Nothing.
Which officials did you report it to in Montgomery County?
Montgomery County, yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I live on a cul-de-sac. There are 6 houses on that cul-de-sac. My oldest daughter, she and her girlfriend were attacked by a pit bull in that neighborhood about 10 years ago. My neighbor on the other side was, these are all different dogs, and my neighbor next door is 93. She was attacked by a dog in her backyard.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to go to Joseph in D.C. before I ask Dan DeRaymer to talk about how these calls are handled. So here's Joseph in D.C. Joseph, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to say that I have a neighbor who was walking her dog, and her dog was attacked by another neighbor who was walking two other dogs. The neighbor recently moved in with those dogs. And I come to find out that, and it was reported as the District of Columbia dog control, and they came up, did a report, didn't remove the dog or anything. Come to find out that both dogs, had numerous attacks in the past. And yet still the dogs remain. What I found out is that the District of Columbia does not have any specific dog law remedies in terms of, civil compensation. You just simply use the civil tort. And it makes it somewhat difficult to go against the owner of the property in a rental. And we're sort of stuck in that way. On a side note, I'm also interested in whether or not squirrels in the District of Columbia potentially have rabies.
Whether schools?
Is squirrels.
Oh, squirrels. I thought you said schools. Okay, Dan DeRaymer, we have several questions here. Let's deal with the last one first. Squirrels, rabies.
Well, technically any mammal could have rabies. So that's why we look into when there's a dog bite incident or any animal involved in a bite, we will investigate that and potentially test them for rabies if necessary. They are not a high risk, considered a high risk species or a vector species for rabies. So while it's possible, it's unlikely.
Vito Del Vente, Venvento, squirrels, rabies?
Yeah, so I echo Mr. Duramo's comments exactly. And with any animal, there is the opportunity for surveillance. And if they're exhibiting any signs that would give us indication for conducting that surveillance, we certainly would act on that. And some of those signs are typically exhibited as neurologic signs. And so animals that are not acting quite in a normal capacity, often related to their posturing, also related to their ability to ambulate. So are they walking with some sense of neurologic component representing almost like a drunken person, if you will, where they're not walking in a straight line and they're sort of stumbling? Those are the kinds of outward behaviors that we would look at and want to, determine if that is, in fact, an individual that's exhibiting some signs representing a potential rabies case.
We got a tweet from Elizabeth. Had a big raccoon family, big in size, not quantity, living in our alley a few years ago. Called DC Animal Control, and they told us we were on our own. They don't deal with raccoons. We talked with the neighbors about good garbage can hygiene, and the raccoons eventually moved on their own. But Dan, can you walk us through what happens if someone calls Animal Control in DC? What's the procedure?
Well, specifically in regards to a call about raccoons in an alley, one of the great things about DC is all the green space that we have here, and with that green space comes a lot of wildlife. That is just one of the things that the residents of DC will either enjoy or have to deal with, is all the wildlife that will be around them. And if the animals are not exhibiting any concerning behaviors, similar to what Dr. Del Vento just listed, or acting aggressively or anything like that, then for the most part, yeah, the wildlife will be allowed to live in their environment, do their wildlife things. We do give suggestions to people who call in to help keep the wildlife off their property if they don't want them around, but it is one of those situations that you are not totally going to be able to remove yourself from, just because we could take those three raccoons out of the alley, release them one block over so you don't see them anymore. Either they're going to come back, or another family of raccoons will move into their place. So it's a better idea to try to remove the things that are attracting them to your alley, to cut down on how much you're seeing them there, versus, you know, just trying to remove those few raccoons that you happen to be seeing.
We got an email from Clay who said, an email from Brett who says, I have two big dogs. One is a pit bull, Great Dane mix. His size alone can intimidate people who don't know dogs. I will admit he could be dangerous. If you show any affection, he might try to lick you to death. Since most folks aren't made of sugar or salt, I'm not too worried about this behavior. Last Saturday, we were walking past a school when a group of kids came by, seemingly after a weekend field trip to a pumpkin patch. I could see many of the kids were nervous about the dog, so I kept them on a short leash. When one child passed by, she made a fake lunge back at the dog. Had my dogs been high-strung, this may have resulted in the dogs snapping back. Dan, how should one respond to animals we encounter, whether they're acting strange or not?
I mean, it's important to remember that they're animals, and animals will react to people fake lunging at them, or and it's important to, one, make sure that you keep control of your animal, because you never know what people that you're going to pass on the sidewalk are going to do. But it's also important that you teach your kids how to behave properly around animals. Make sure you always ask before first approaching an animal to pet them or something like that. It's a lot of common sense stuff, but a lot of people tend to forget that different animals respond differently, and you have to approach each one of them as an individual and make sure you're doing it safely.
Vito Del Vento, in a region made up of multiple jurisdictions, states, cities, counties, if there's an animal on the loose, or if you find a positive test for a disease, how do you coordinate with your counterparts in other parts of the region?
So we have a very comprehensive, surveillance program. And as part of that surveillance program, there's a communication element to that. That is standard protocol for any good public health department. And our coordination exists both in the animal services as well as with our epidemiology group. And so the Department of Health has the ability to coordinate between the two, and then also reach out to neighboring jurisdictions that have the same governmental structure. And in our case, of course, we're in a city setting, but our neighboring jurisdictions are county. And so we reach out to the county officials, and we coordinate any efforts necessary so that we are sure that we have been comprehensive in our response, and that we have made contact with any and all individuals that may be at risk, and be sure that we've collected the proper information from them, as well as given them the proper directives for further actions, whether that be behavioral actions with their own animals, or whether it be medical actions if necessary in the case of potential rabies exposure.
We got a Facebook comment from Lynn Hickman Wood. This is a good reminder for people not to mess with wild animals unless experienced. Here in Salisbury, Maryland, I have had two rabid raccoons on my farm. The police came and shot them. One of them bit me. I had to get the series of vaccinations, which are no big deal, but they are very expensive. Each vaccination is over $700. Good advice, Dan. Don't mess with wild animals.
That is pretty much the main point to get across is... do not mess with them.
Here now is Max in Kensington. Max, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hi. I just wanted to mention that recently on my walk, I was, I think I came across a coyote. It behaved very differently than a fox. It kind of stood in the road and checked me out as it was going from from house to house. Now, I'm a camper, and I love Kensington because I see more wildlife in this area than I see when I go camping, both in terms of mammals and birds. But I wouldn't want to come across a coyote that had rabies. And I was wondering, knowing that they are all up and down the coast, what kinds of information do you come by when it comes to coyotes? And on a personal note, ever since then, it may be a little bit paranoid, but I take my bear spray with me every evening when I go on a walk in the woods.
I don't know how that effective is with a coyote, Dan DeRamo.
Well, as far as coyotes go, there are coyotes in this area. We have seen them in D.C. from time to time. They would not be considered a high-risk species. It's important to not confuse a wildlife or a raccoon or coyote, for that matter, not being particularly afraid of humans, not confusing that with showing neurological symptoms. The population of wildlife that we have in D.C. is very accustomed to being around people and being in an urban setting, so they are not as afraid when people are outside or you go to put out your trash and there's one already waiting on your trash can. At the same time, doesn't mean they're friendly, but just because they don't immediately run off or act scared of you like you might see in the woods doesn't necessarily mean that that is a sick coyote or raccoon, for that matter.
Here now is Charles in Washington, D.C. Charles, you're on the air. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Twice within the last year, once walking at night to the Kennedy Center, and then 1 week ago, walking across a small parking lot for a Starbucks, I had a rat run into my foot. And I was just, you know, it caused me to remember that Marion Barry, as I think you know, Kojo, made his political reputation with a war on rats. But now, the mayor of the District of Columbia seems to be very proud of having a new mayor for nightlife, who I believe has responsibilities for bars, restaurants, and rats, as if rats are an inevitable part of nightlife.
Well, let's talk with Dan DeRamo about rats. You mentioned Marion Barry before he became a politician in the District of Columbia. He ran an organization called Pride Incorporated, which had a well-known rat patrol. And I guess that's what our caller is referring to. But what problems are we seeing with rats these days, Dan?
Well, rats is actually not something that animal control handles. There is a rat abatement program, and that might be something better for Dr. Del Vento to speak on.
Vino?
Yes. So the District of Columbia in the Department of Health does have a rodent control program, and again, that is part of our overall service. And I can tell you they're a very busy group. There's a option for folks to call in and let them know of where rats have been seen. But in addition to that, there's a comprehensive program where there's an entire team of individuals that go out and monitor the city. And of course, areas where there's food establishments tend to be of greater concern for the obvious reason. But that group is out there. But again, I'd like to add that there's a number of programs that the district offers. And in response to our mayor, Mariel Bowser, one of the great prides that that we take and that she has expressed interest in is that we do have a unique setting in that there's a lot of green space in our city, very much different than other cities. And as a result, we get to enjoy the wildlife and some of the unique things that come with that. The flip side to it is you do have to deal with some of the issues, and I think it's important for us to be cognizant and informed as to, you know, what it takes to live in harmony with these sorts of settings. And our mayor, Mariel Bowser, is certainly interested in D.C. being in an animal-friendly city, and so we make great efforts to put rules, regulation, and policy in place that help make that happen. With regards to things like rats, of course, they're considered a nuisance, and so again, there are programs in place to deal with them as well. But a little bit, it's the balancing act between living in harmony, both people and animals.
The woman who was killed by the dog that she adopted some years ago in Congress Heights, Danda Raymond, when stories like these happen, people might lump them together and view certain kinds of animals as inherently dangerous. Here's a quick sample. First, we'll go with Kevin in Washington, D.C. Kevin, your turn.
Yes, good afternoon, Kojo and company. I live in Ward 4, and there's a dog pit bull down the street from a, let's say, sort of unstable household. This dog attacked my dog twice, and the person who was walking the dog refused to contain the pit bull and pull him back and just care for the dog. So I had to jump into the fray twice. The problem is he continues to walk the dog up and down the street. My dog is now terrified of any type of dog that's larger than him and that resembles a pit bull. And he used to be very friendly with all dogs prior to this. So there's been permanent damage. I'm wondering, is there something that can be done about this particular household in terms of where that pit bull is walked and perhaps not walked? Because there is a house two doors down, two pit bulls, both attacked a dog about a month ago.
Okay, hold that thought for a second, and Dan, hold your thoughts in response to that for a second, because here comes Sandy in Bethesda. Sandy, your turn.
Hi, am I coming through?
Yes.
Last May, my husband, dog, and I were attacked by two pit bulls in our front yard. They had escaped from a neighbor's. My husband spent the day in the emergency room. The vet said that my dog almost died. My husband thought he was going to be killed. It was, part of what I want to mention is I think pit bulls are very dangerous. Maybe they're lovely for a while, but then they can be dangerous.
Okay.
The other thing that's very critical is any time there is an attack by a dog is to file a report with the Animal Control Board. Don't just do it orally, but file the report. One of these dogs had had a previous complaint, and since the owners of the dog that was the victim of the attack in that case had not filed a report, the
There was no report, and so I'm pushing you ahead because we're running out of time very quickly. You're underscoring the point that it's important to file a report, but before I get Dan DeRamo to respond to all of this, I wanted to go to Brian in Alexandria, who underscores the nature of the problem we're talking about. Brian, your turn.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I was going to do this as a preemptive call because nobody had mentioned it is inevitable they're going to bring up pit bulls when they talk about this. A number of years ago, I read the book The Lost Dogs, and I think everybody in this discussion should go out and read it. It was the story of the seizure and ultimate redemption of the almost 50 dogs that were seized from the Michael Vick fighting ring. And many of them were pit bulls. They weren't all pit bulls. and it, nobody thought there was any chance in that they were ever going to be redeemable. They'd all have to be put down, but people stepped in, and they rehabilitated them, and it proved that dogs do not inherently want to fight. They are made to fight. When you hear about all these...
I'm glad you brought that up, because as I said, we're running out of time. Dan DeRemo, the issue that I'm talking about here is when people lump a certain kind of animal together as inherently dangerous. How can we strike a balance between caution and prejudice?
You're right. The term pit bull gets thrown around quite a bit for any muscular...
And it's not even a real breed, right?
Right. There's American Pit Bull Terrier, American Staffordshire Terrier, Bull Terriers, all that, all get lumped under pit bull whenever anyone sees a big-headed, muscular dog involved in something bad. And really, a lot of these dogs are mixed breeds. We don't know the history of them. We don't know the circumstances surrounding the incident. The two incidences that were just listed by the callers were both dogs running at large, and sounds like could have been curbed had it not been for someone following the leash law. There really is...
How important is it to report when those things occur?
It's the most important thing to call it in. There is no statistics that say one breed is more dangerous than another. DC has very strong laws that allow us to investigate each bite incident on a case-by-case scenario to look at the circumstances surrounding that bite, the specific animal involved in that bite, not necessarily a breed or anything like that, and then we do what's necessary to protect the people involved.
Vito Del Vento, you get the last comment.
Sure, I'd further like to expand that. It is crucial that those reports are made, and each of those reports is thoroughly investigated by the Department of Health, and I just want the listeners to know that again, many services that exist in the district, and one of them is that when we do have animals that are investigated, it goes through a comprehensive evaluation, and there is the determination made, and individual dogs can be deemed dangerous or can be deemed potentially dangerous. And with those come certain sets of criterion, which the owners must come into compliance with in order to maintain those animals. And one of the sort of myths that's not true is people think that their dog's going to be confiscated by the department and put down or euthanized humanely, and that's not the case. Again, there can be ownership of both dangerous dogs as well as potentially dangerous dogs, but with it comes a very set of criterion in which an owner needs to maintain in order for those animals to still reside within the district.
Vito Del Vento is the program manager of DC's Animal Services and Animal Disease Prevention in the district's Department of Health. He's also a vet. Dr. Del Vento, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
And Dan DeRemo is the director of animal control at the Humane Rescue Alliance. Dan DeRemo, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Going to take a short break. When we come back, incidents of hate and hate crimes in this region. I'm Kojo Namdi.
WAMU 88.5 is your listener-supported NPR news station in the greater Washington, D.C. region. You can support the Kojo Namdi Show and all the regional coverage you value by becoming a member today. Click the donate button at WAMU.org, and thanks.